Welcome to the For the Reef podcast. Each week we bring our fish nerd conversations from the fish room floor to your living room. We try to bridge the gap between the saltwater aquarium hobby and coral reef conservation. Now, here are your hosts, fisheries biologist and founder of For the Reef Apparel, Mitch Dender, with local fish store owner and first responder, Ian Bell.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the For the Reef podcast. Today, we're really lucky to have Jay Wilson on the podcast. He's the sales manager for Ceche. He's currently the national sales manager for Ceche, and we're really thankful to have you on. So welcome to the podcast, Jay.
I appreciate it. I don't know if you're lucky. I think your list kind of ran dry there.
Yeah, we were really scraping the bottom of the aquarium, so to speak.
For those who don't know, can we get a little description of who and what Ceche is?
Yeah.
I mean, Ceche is an Italian branded company from the early 70s, currently run by four women, and we move water. We have technology that moves water. So whether it's a pond or if it's an aquarium, we can help you move that water, turn it over, transplant it from one place or another, you name it, we can do it.
Yeah, that's when I met you, how long have you been at Ceche now? Because I think this has been a change since I met you.
It is. It'll be 1 year next month.
Nice. And so to give a little background, I was talking to Ian before this, so I know this is the same way that he met you, but we all met at the Niagara Coral Show in Niagara. So that was a lot of fun. And so how has your time been now with Ceche?
Oh, this has been, I mean, phenomenal. I always like to say the next move should always be a higher move or a move with more growth. Mm-hmm. And it's same thing with business, personal life, it doesn't matter. So where I was then, that was my first ever coral show. I didn't even own a saltwater aquarium. And now here I am, you know, almost 1 year deep with Ceche, and I couldn't ask for a better supporting upper echelon from management than what I have right now.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And so for us as a couple of Canadians, where are you at right now?
Dead center of the United States. I'm in Oklahoma. We're actually about to have a record-breaking snowfall in a few days.
Oh, yeah?
15 inches. Wow. Doesn't happen here. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I know Chicago and all those places were getting hit pretty hard. So,
yep, we're about to get it.
The winter goats.
Worry about wind more than snow, I would think, usually.
Yeah, so that's the tough part here is with wind chill, it's supposed to be negative 10. And, you know, we get rain or sleet and it's so cold and the wind blows that everything's a sheet of ice. So right now we have ice and now we're supposed to get snow. So if the ice doesn't melt, which it's not going to from now until then, power lines, trees, that's when we start losing pretty much everything. No bueno.
So we were just talking with Jay before we started here too. Before Ceche, Jay was with Fritz, and we just found out that he also is the president of Northfin Foods USA, which I didn't know until about 10 minutes ago. He's deeply involved in the aquarium world.
Yes. It's kind of one of those things where I started Northfin USA solely because I liked the food. It was actually New Life Spectrum or Northfin at the time. And in the United States, we couldn't get Northfin like you Canadians were getting it. So I reached out to the company like anybody would just to get information, and they sent me samples. And from then I said, I'd like to get it. And they said, well, nobody sells it there. And so I made the recommendation that it was better to get New Life Spectrum based on availability for folks in the US. And then about 4 to 5 months later, that quickly changed. I then started Northfin USA and started bringing it in, and now just, you go into a fish store, I mean, anywhere in Canada, they carry it, but now it was globally recognized as brand of the year last year. And it's in Australia, it's in India, you know, all throughout the US. It's really awesome.
Yeah. And that's like a big line of pelleted foods, right? Or is it?
Correct. They do flake now too, and soft coral food, but we have the full line from you have a little bitty nano fish to a massive 16, 17 inch fish. There's food across the spectrum from pellets to fry starting powder to soft coral food and big discs and buckets of flake. So
that's awesome. So I guess that I know that you have a little bit of a military background and you have a range of different parts of the industry that you've worked in. How do you get so involved in the aquarium industry?
Well, it's because everything I did in the military was completely opposite. I was a counterterrorism agent. So I did a lot of security and then I did a lot of travel and protection of human assets, not necessarily just physical assets. And so when I got out, I struggled. I jumped into the aquarium hobby by learning to keep an aquarium to get my mind off everything. And then I started to realize that if you just communicate and network with companies, there's a lot that could have unfolded then. It's a lot different now with the way social media has taken off with the influencing market and things like that. So for me, it really started making a YouTube video and then playing around with products, which led me to my first job in the industry, which was Universal Rocks, making backgrounds, aquarium decor, building aquariums. And then it was Fritz, learning the chemical side. And now it's Ceche, and ultimately learning movement of water. With owning the business with fish food, I've really pretty much touched everything except importing fish, which I won't do. So I've been deeply embedded because it keeps my mind busy. And there really is so much to the aquarium hobby and industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for your service, by the way. I have a lot of respect.
Oh, no, I loved it. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's like, I want to make you blush here, but I remember when we met, you're a really passionate guy about, you know, living a full life and, communicating with people and all of that kind of stuff. My wife was there. She's part of this thing with me too. And, she followed you on all of the different channels and she has no interest in the aquarium industry.
So, well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's,
so,
I mean,
Kelly just tolerates us.
Yeah. She doesn't even listen to anything I put out on the internet, but somehow she's listening to you.
Smile and nod. Yes, sir.
So where's all that passion come from?
The passion comes from, I've seen the whole world. Honestly, the only continent I haven't had the opportunity to be on was Antarctica. The plane broke down and so we weren't able to take off, but it's kind of that weird thing. I don't want to dampen the mood, but I've been everywhere, man. I have, mm-hmm. I've been in a children's sick hospital in Nepal. I've been in war torn countries in the Middle East, and I've been in parts of Mongolia, all the way, you know, to great, beautiful, flourishing places in Australia. And everybody brings something special. And it's really cool to just kind of float through the world as just this one body and be able to potentially have impact, because regardless of what we think, we're all very much human beings. So we're all similar in some sort of way. And that passion comes from, I want to grow that. I want to spread that. I want people to know that, especially in this industry, you don't have to like a fish. That could just be the platform for me to get to wherever it is that eventually I'm supposed to get to. And so I play it in my head that way. Like, this is an opportunity that I don't want to mess up meeting somebody. I don't want to mess that up, because you can't re-meet somebody twice. You only get to meet them one time. So that's where it comes from.
Yeah. That's really cool. And it's like, I really kind of vibe with that, especially because, like Ian with his store, you know, he didn't have to be involved in conservation. I didn't have to be involved in conservation. And it's something that has pulled us into and kind of what has made me and Ian close friends now is just this passion for something. And it's kind of where our life comes out of. And it's funny, the same thing with the aquariums. It's like, you know, people don't get why we end up having 30 tanks in our house. And, you know, I'm moving right now and I'm making decisions about the layout on my house based on the aquarium.
Same thing.
So, yeah, that's moving too.
Yeah, no, and not to cut you off, dude, but seriously, I just like just before I turned the camera on, I printed out a floor plan of a house that we saw. And I said, put down wherever we're going to put our stuff so we can see where the aquariums are going. Yeah. And there happens to be a detached garage with a breezeway. And I said, email this guy and find out if it's got electrical, if it's insulated. Like this, it's good, but sometimes it can be stressful.
So how far are you moving, Jake?
I mean, the worst case, 25 minutes. I mean, I just moved a year ago from Dallas to be closer to my son. Yeah. And that was a move that had to be done. And I didn't want to buy, which hindsight would have been great in this market. I could have resold and made a profit on a 1 year owned home. But now it's just more about finding the stability. My son's four. He's going to be starting school in a little bit.
Sure.
They're not going anywhere. I don't want to go anywhere. So now it's time to really kick up the aquariums.
A couple notches. We've done a couple episodes because of Mitch's move on preparing for a move and stuff like that. What kind of things are you going through right now in that mode? What are you finding that are your biggest hurdles?
My biggest hurdles are hoping to find a home before my lease is up. That's the big thing for me, because if I don't, then what do? Do I break down tanks? I mean, nobody's readily available to take 2 6-foot tanks. I mean, I've got 11 tanks legitimately. So who's going to take those and hold those for me? That's the scary part. So right now I always say prior planning prevents poor performance. And if I don't plan, that's a failure. And so right now it's find a home. And we've made a cutoff that, 2 months before the lease is up, which will be April. If we do not have a home, now it's time for the critical plan to drain the tanks, hold the fish somewhere. Fish are a lot easier to hold than the aquariums. And so that would be ideal. I'll just network with some stores, hopefully some friends around here, and hold this bucket of fish for a month and a half until I get up and running again.
I would imagine there's a fair bit of travel with your job. How do you maintain 11 tanks while we're moving around?
Right now, no travel, but ideally, yes. I set up aquariums so that I really don't have to do much other than water changes. I know everybody goes, what? That doesn't, but no, it's true. This tank behind me, I can go probably a month and a half before I have to do a water change. And that's perfect. I'm on the road. I'll be on the road 10 days max, 14, the worst. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I got an aquarium right in front of me behind you guys. I haven't done a water change since July of last year.
Yeah.
That's, and I don't have to.
Yeah. That's like the, I watched, your YouTube stuff, and I saw you got your saltwater tank now and everything.
Yeah.
So, I must say, I preach like crazy that anybody can find time for an aquarium and a reef tank even and stuff like that. But I've had my fair share of planted freshwater tanks and, not doing water changes in them forever, and they look crystal clear. And then I have my reef tank, and that is like an extension of my body.
Yes.
So how are you finding your transition here to getting into the salty world?
The evaporation's killing me.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, because it's a temporary tank. I set it up. I think it's been up almost a year now. And I'm not discrediting anybody in the reefing world. It's a lot easier than I made it out to be in my head, but I am not controlling. I'm not dosing. I'm not in it. It's not an extension of me yet.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money in it, but I think that's the difference. Aquariums are expensive, but the level of expense that you can put into a saltwater tank is way different than a freshwater tank. Now, I'm not saying you can't get crazy with a freshwater tank, but when I look at that saltwater tank, or I think about it, I mean, there's fish that are worth more than my house that I'm living in right now. And there's nothing in the freshwater world that's like that. And so maintaining it and understanding it, it's a 30 gallon aquarium with a 8 gallon sump. So let's say 40 gallons total. I do top offs because I don't have an ATO yet. I'm getting a bigger tank I didn't want to put all that money into an ATO and then have to sell all of it potentially. And I'm doing a water change probably every 10 days.
Yeah.
So, but I don't do a lot of stuff. I've only got 3 fish in there and the rest is coral.
Nice.
So right now it's okay. I do pay more attention to it, by the way, though, like in detail than I do the freshwater tanks. Like I'll glance at the freshwater, the coral, I'm always on the coral. Magnifying glass, zooming in, like, ooh, man, this one's growing nicely. This one's about to split. Yeah. But I'm getting into it. But the management is, it's a little different, but I'm not as connected as most are.
Right. That's actually, so I have a native species tank here, moved with me. It's like my backpack and a fish tank. I work as a fisheries biologist. So I collected these native fish legally. Everybody asked that. By the way, it's not that illegal. If you have a sports fishing license, you can collect bait fish and everything. But it's like we take fish from the other side of the world and ship them to aquarium stores. But like taking fish that are common in your backyard, people think it's illegal. But anyway,
yeah,
I got this native species tank that has, you know, some bluegills and things like that, sunfish, some creek chub, and it has a feeder on it. It has no heater. It has some plants that just grow like crazy. And it actually has a Ceche whale canister filter. And
I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. And like, I mean, I don't touch that tank. It stays perfectly clean. The feeder feeds them. I check in every once in a while. But I must say my big difference from freshwater to saltwater and where I start to lose interest, and not even lose interest because I've kept freshwater basically my whole life too, is in a saltwater tank, I find when I'm looking into it, every single day is something different. I'm finding things in there that I can't even ID yet. I'm working, you know, it's like a constant growing thing inside the tank. Where with freshwater, it can be there. The diversity can be there, but you really have to take the time and introduce a lot of different stuff to get there. Do you, but I know you're a big cichlid guy.
So I actually had this conversation the other day and I said, there's just way more diversity in freshwater keeping. But once your tank is done, it's like a piece of art. It's done, right? The only thing that's really going to change is either growth, death, and that's it, really. If you have it all done feeding and you're not touching really anything, that's it. But with the saltwater aquarium, even though there's not as much diversity that I see, right? Everybody's got similar coral, the similar fish, unless you're a millionaire and you can buy these crazy one-off tangs that I don't even want to know go for how much. It's living art, you know? Your anemone's moving. Your torch is trying to sting something. Your mushrooms have now grown over. Everything is changing for me. And it is. I go over there. I have a cave basslet. It's taken her 4 months. By the way, her name is Carol Basslet. But it's
taken. You haven't had any fish go missing, have you?
No, nothing yet. No, nothing yet. They've jumped out, which makes me wonder. I don't want to say holy grail fish, but it was a grail fish for me because of how beautifully pink it is. And my son loves that color. She didn't come out for the first almost 4.5-5 months. Now she's flourishing and it's like, I've got to go check her out every day. I walk by the tank and I don't do that with the freshwater tanks. And so you're right. It's unless I'm breeding, which I'm not into that. Why do I have to go deep stare into the tank? I know how many cichlids are in there. I know where they're going and they're not moving onto the rocks. So there is a lot to see with a saltwater tank. And I don't think it ever just stays. That's the living art piece. And the freshwater aquarium is that final piece. It's done.
Yeah.
And it hangs on the wall.
No, that's a great way to describe it. So right now with your tanks, do you got a favorite out of your 11?
So the one behind me is probably my favorite, but I'm having the most evaporation issues. What I have branched off into is vivariums. And now I'm getting ready to do a massive paludarium as soon as I move. I already have the tank. Yeah, I'm really excited for that because that's a living piece of art in the freshwater side. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have, you know, arboreal lizards, dart frogs, you know, tree frogs, and then fish, waterfall, misting. I mean, that's a whole world. So yeah. I've been practicing aquariums, vivariums, and now I want to combine them together because I think that would be really wicked. And the footprint of this thing is awesome, which is why I have to plan the whole move and make sure that I can display this right. So that's exciting. But as far as favorite, it would probably have to be this tank because the fish behind me are on the cares list. I did get them tank raised and I'm excited to watch them grow. They just take forever. So it's kind of boring.
So the people won't be able to see it, but I would say that's what, about a 6-foot tank. It's got a really large rockscape in it.
Yep. It's 6 foot, 22 by 22. It's about 180 gallons. There's about 40 fish in there. I have two catfish in there that I've had for now 9 years. And they've been through everything. They're not going anywhere. I've always said, even if I had to give up aquariums, they will have their own little aquarium with me. I don't care what anybody says. But yeah, it's a really cool natural laid out landscape.
So being CJ and all, I think we would be remiss to not delve into your expertise. So what would you say are the biggest mistakes that you find people, or maybe mistakes or things that they overlook in plumbing and flow?
They do too much. This plumbing that's happening in the world today looks like Mario has done it in a video game. The more 90s, the more 45s, you know, the further you go, the harder any piece of equipment has to work to push the water from A to B, right? And that's where you get back pressure. That's where you potentially get louder noise. So when you're building this system, because that's the other difference with salt water, folks are like, I need purple, red, green, blue. It's Roy G. Biv for their PVC pipes. And which I'm not knocking, just the shorter distance to where you got to go is always more efficient, especially for a pump. And then I would truly, honestly, as far as equipment of moving water, whenever you're getting ready to make that purchase, there's things you should look for. This is coming from somebody that would spend their hard-earned money. I don't care what the name is. I don't care if it's not CJ. The idea for me is it should be something that fits your aquarium properly. You're not overbuying because that was what your friend told you to get. And it has there is warranty. I need a good warranty. And if the warranty is there and a company backs it, then go for it. But you don't have to spend $1,000 on a return pump to get the same effects that somebody could spend $400 on a return pump. You know, I'll plug CJ here. I won't own an Apex because I'm not that controlled. I do have a Felix on this tank. I got it in the Kickstarter. I support Canada like deeply with food, you name it, friendships, but I couldn't see spending all that money for myself on a saltwater tank. But CJ developed the Control app where I can have my power heads and I can have my return pump all connected to the app. And it doesn't cost me $1,000 just to control it. It's costing me potentially less than $1,000. And I have full control over all of my pumps with redundancy anywhere in the world. So don't just buy because everybody else gets it. Listen to your local fish store, have them walk you through the good stuff, and then make the decision based on what's best for you and what is readily available in your area. Because I wouldn't want them to go in your store and purchase, you know, let's say it's Jay's pump. Oh, I want Jay's pump. Well, I only have one left and I can't get them anymore. Well, I don't want to buy Jay's pump. I want to be able to come back to you. You know, I want to be able to come back to your store and continue to pump that revenue back to your store to not only help my community, but to ultimately help myself, because I'm not just paying for the pump. I'm paying for your expertise too.
Mm-hmm. So I found the labeling on a lot of pump boxes can be misleading if you don't really read it carefully or understand it. Actually, Jay just helped me a little bit ago. I have a customer who has, she has two 300 gallon tanks. We're working on the first one right now. We're retrofitting it. I had some pumps on it. And after I did some flow testing and things like that, first of all, I found out that the piping that was on there was way too small. so there was too much resistance. And the pump that I had on it couldn't do what I needed it to do. She wanted to add on a UV sterilizer and things like that. So one to the other, we did find one of Jay's pumps that would do the job for me. I think it's the 16HF.
The high flow.
The big one.
The high flow. Yeah, the HF16.
It did the job. It's doing great. So we did come to a solution, but there was a lot of, before I just went out and said, hey, Jay, which pump should I use? Which I should have done in the first place. looking through all the diagrams and people's interpretations of what flow and head pressure mean to their picture was very unclear. Mm-hmm. What do you think people should be thinking about and considering as they're looking at pumps that they may be misinterpreting?
The average hobbyist?
Yeah.
I mean, really, the average hobbyist, like I said, shortest distance, that's the way you want to plumb. And make sure, you know, some folks will say you need 10 times, some will say 20 times. Nobody really knows. It really is dependent on a lot of variables. So if I'm going to look at a specific pump, I will go to their website. It just so happens we have majority of our head pressure diagrams and where it stops, which is very telling of a company. Like, we're willing to put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I don't always take gallons per hour from most companies as word of bond. Like, that's what's going to happen. Just that's because how are they testing them? Now, what was funny for me is when I would buy stuff like filters, I loved the FX6 at the time. I still like it. It's still a great filter, but it's not pumping 900 gallons per hour. I know it's not. And people are buying it because they think it's doing that. They're not buying it because it's potentially big enough for them to house the media that they need, et cetera, et cetera. So if you're trying to decipher all this stuff on the box, go to the manufacturer first. I know we've got blogs. I know we've got all those things. But if the store's like, hey, that stuff gets kind of tricky for me, this is what I do, maybe the store says, hey, let's look at the website. I'm sure most companies have that on their website. And if they don't, they can get you that information. Because if you're trying to pump something 16 feet in the air and you go, well, I'll just get this 3,000 gallon per hour pump and it does, 12 feet, it's not going to get it up there. And if it does, it's going to be really weak. And the same goes, well, I need it to go 15 and a half feet. The pump goes 16, so I'll max it out. Well, I mean, why are you going to max it out and potentially risk running this pump into the ground because it's and you didn't put 5/8 and it should have been an inch? Like, we say it all on the box. We do have the adapters. Some of our pumps are older packaging, don't have it all on there. But majority of our stuff has exactly what threads work best going out and in. And you really got to pay attention to that because it can really mess up.
Well, the other thing that I find quite often that I'm running into is people will buy this pump that's supposed to do what they want it to do, go up floor and floor or whatever, and then they take it and they immediately reduce the pipe diameter. I mean, I'm in my mind, you guys build these things with a certain diameter pump because it's meant to go with that certain diameter pipe to have the most effectiveness. And a lot of the times, I think what the problem comes up to be, I don't know if it's a problem, but the thing that comes up to be is that a lot of the pumps are meant to have 1.25-inch pipe on them, which in a lot of your average hardware stores isn't readily available. So they just reduce it down. And then they wonder why they're not getting the flow.
Correct. There's also, well, I don't want it to look like this, so I'm going to immediately put a 90 right off the out. And I mean, you want to talk about back pressure as soon as it hits a wall.
Yeah.
That's the weird part, is especially companies overseas, right? Like an Italian company, they know exactly they're going to run it through a test and they're going to say, hey, look, an inch, 3/4 inch, inch and a quarter, flex tube. If you notice, most companies, when you call them and say, man, your pump's a little noisy. Well, are you running hard straight off PVC right off? Yeah. And I have a 90 and then it goes to a T, which this is a true story. And I said, well, maybe you should run flex pipe straight off. And then, you don't have to go the whole way, mm-hmm. but run flex pipe a little bit away so it dampens the sound. well, this person had the PVC, stapled to the wall on wood. It's boom, 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 boom. Yep. Man, I don't care if you put a Tesla on the wall, you're going to hear something at that point. So that's the planning. The prior planning is the key. And if you don't know, it doesn't hurt to ask. Maybe not necessarily a forum or a Facebook group, because you usually get eaten alive there. But for the most part, contact the manufacturer. That's the other passion part we talked about. I love taking calls. I love taking the emails of somebody going, I'm having a problem with this. And it's like, that's not a problem. This is an education piece. Let's go do it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's exciting.
I actually just ran into that same issue with the flex pipe. We had, with that same 300 gallon tank, we put the big beast on there. We had all the plumbing all nicely secured and we're doing things. I'm like, man, is that loud? And we thought, well, maybe we're just not used to it. And that we came back and we did exactly what you said. We put a loop with the flex tube on there. Yep. Almost non-existent noise.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, like, it was crazy. A huge difference.
And it's amazing that we won't apply the same knowledge to plumbing an aquarium as we would something else. Mm-hmm. Like if you turn on your faucet, look at that, the lights went out. If you turn on the faucet and you reduce it all the way, there's potential for it to leak up top by the actual faucet, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have all the washers tight and everything. And we just lose that knowledge when we go to aquariums. We're like, well, this pump's going to do everything that it said it did. Well, the pump doesn't do it by itself. You still have to connect everything properly. And I think that's where we tend to potentially make shortcuts that should never be made, because we saw somebody and it looked so beautiful the way they angled all their pipes. We're not in that person's home. We're not in that store. And most stores they have all the fancy plumbing, but they're not living there.
No,
you know, music's going, they're talking, they got customers happening. They're not worried about a little hum. If it's sitting next to me while I'm watching TV.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a lot different.
Yeah. Well, the things that we do in the store too are for demonstration purposes, to show off stuff. We're not exactly like you said, we're not thinking about living there. I'm trying to show you what's available, what can be done.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's ringing really true to me right now. Because in my new house, I have a furnace room that's in the basement, and it's like the perfect room for, you know, the in the words of Rich Ross, the Mitch Dender fish lab type thing, you know, and I love that, because I just kind of want to go down in my cave and have my mess down there. And it'd be that. So I love the idea of having my sump down there. The problem is, and then the main reef on the main floor of the house.
Yeah.
Problem is, if I do that, I'm looking at one turn, two turns, and probably call it 30, 35 feet of total length.
Yeah.
So am I, what am I thinking here? Not good.
You're going to need a very, very, very big pump.
Yeah.
That's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think the high flow 16, don't quote me, I think it's 23 feet. I'd have to relook, but I think it's 23 feet. That's the most powerful that I've played with from Ceche. Whether we have some in Europe, I don't know. But do you have to make those turns? Can you not just drill straight down and potentially not have to make those turns?
No, I have to make those turns. I think, I think I have to make those turns, or I have to put the sump under the tank, which is in the other.
Which is not something what you really want to do, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you've been to, you know, aquariums and you've had behind the scenes tours, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do something very similar, just on a micro scale, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
So dampen wherever that sump's going to be, because whatever pump you're putting in there, not designed to be quiet.
Yeah, that's good. I'll have to like soundproof that furnace room.
Yeah, I mean, you could. There's a product called Dynamat. They use it for like sound systems.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you dampen the walls. Just make sure nothing's touching. You know, that's the key.
Yeah.
And that soft loop makes a huge difference.
It does.
You know what? I didn't even think of that. I was thinking of doing the same thing. I was like, well, I'll just let the piping hang a little bit in the basement, and then I'll put the colorful piping. It's going to look great.
Yeah, that's I mean, I want it to look good. Yeah. I'm running silicone tube, which is very scary, because if you if it kinks in any way, you're done.
Yeah.
But I'm not even joking. I'm sitting on the far end of my couch, and that reef tank is, I'm being conservative when I say this, it's about 5.5 feet from me. And I've got return pump, wave maker, and skimmer going. And if I turn the TV off, the only thing I can hear is the water breaking on the weirs of the overflow box.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's what I want. But nothing is hard plumbed.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. I find noise really can disrupt the magic. If you're, yeah, like when
you've ever been to the movies?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, not in a while.
Yeah,
not in a while.
Yeah, but yeah. No, it's true. We don't think of that. We want it to be pretty. And I get that. It's a reflection of the work somebody's putting into it. And I totally understand that. But at the end of the day, do you want it to look super good when you open the cabinet every once in a while? Or do you want it to be ultra quiet and still as beautiful from what you're seeing all the time? Mm-hmm. The idea is you don't want it cluttered or, you know, unsafe, but maybe we don't need to plumb it with a bunch of different colors and all the cool angles. And then it blasted against the sheetrock with these U braces and go, why is my house vibrating? Well, you put 4 pumps on your 100-gallon aquarium and you went crazy with it. That, you know, that's the other thing I see in reef keeping, whether you talk to folks that have been doing this 50 years or you talk to folks that have been doing this 6 months, there is just a massive difference of opinion on the flow in the tank, what you need to do and where it needs to go. And, you know, to me, coral really hasn't changed. We just have access to more. But, you know, I got guys I'll talk to, they're like, yeah, I got 150-gallon aquarium and I've got 8 power heads in there. I'm like, what? Do you have a return pump going? No. Do you have a ton of rock? No. This is a coral's blasted against the wall of the aquarium. You know, I guess I can't fathom all that, because when I set up my tank, based on everything I planned out in this tank, the flows, there's nothing that's not moving and moving the way it should be with just a return pump. Now, granted, it's not as big, but that just seems so excessive. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the clout. Remember, I don't know if you guys had this in Canada, but in high school, it was like rims got bigger after high school on your car, but they were really small when I was in high school. And it was like, the guy with the smallest rims was the coolest. And I look at reef keeping as, it's not the colorful tank. It's like, who's got the most pumps in their tank moving water as well. Yeah.
Do you run any pumps, like powerhead type pumps, to move water in any of your freshwater tanks?
Sure do. I actually have 2 behind me and 2 in my Congo tank. Matter of fact, my Congo tank is as close to a biotope as I've ever done. I have 2 extreme SDCs at 100%, which is 2250 gallons per hour, both, and 2 whale 500s all the way open at max, because it's the river basin of the Congo and that sucker is turbulent. And that was the idea for that. So, and my Zebra Pleco tank does have a power head on a very small tank with a lot of gallons per hour, but it's to create the stream. Outside of that, I don't really use power heads in freshwater unless it's specific to that, you know, group of fish or that area.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too, because that is one thing I find gets lost on a lot of people, like people who have been in the hobby for a long time or new into the hobby, is what is this animal, where does this animal come from and what are its requirements? What is it, what does it want? Right. We go on forums and it's like, you need 30 power heads, or you need, whatever. And we're taking things from every part of the world and throwing them into a tank. And then you're like, well, why am I having issues? Right. It's important.
There's an example of this in African cichlids. And this is a theory of mine. I don't even know if I could ever prove it, but you know, we have 2 species. You have Trophius, which are from Lake Tanganyika, and then you have Pseudotrophius, which are from Malawi. And, you know, I'm assuming back then it was up, the fish come in, all these are cool, we're going to feed them whatever. And the fish were dying and they called it Malawi bloat. Everybody's heard of Malawi bloat at some point. And then it was like this thing that was written forever, that Pseudotrophius from Malawi, Trophius from Tanganyika are herbivores. They don't consume anything else but plants. And I did a lot of reading because that was my idea. I wanted to be well-educated in what I was bringing in or what I was keeping. And I saw a picture of a Trophius grazing across the rock, and there was some snails there. And I just thought to myself, does he go around the snails? I think not. I think they're opportunistic and they're going to eat whatever. And so this whole shift from food this way to this way, then the fish weren't coloring as nicely, or they weren't getting as full as they were supposed to. And then you flip the script and you're like, if you want the best fish, you got to feed this food for this color. The fish is only going to get as good as it is due to its genes. And the fish is only going to get as big based on its genetics again. So the idea is, like you just said, understanding where they came from. If they came from a place that didn't have any of that, I would agree 100%. But my Trophius, the herbivores, they eat krill. I don't feed it to them every day because they're in a closed environment. They're not necessarily always grazing. But I also don't feed them every day because I grow algae on the rocks for them to graze naturally for themselves. Yeah. So understanding it will give you, man, just a more natural environment in your aquarium. I don't care if it's saltwater or freshwater or, you know, brackish, whatever. It doesn't matter. It, to me, if you can provide the closest natural environment, it's the best.
For sure.
It ultimately is the best.
And I find it makes the best like viewing experience, you know, when you get to sit and watch them act, especially one of the things I like about cichlids, and I'm not a cichlid guy, but I did some volunteer work for actually the Belle Isle Aquarium in Detroit. And they have all kinds of cichlids there. And I started to like cichlids there because the tanks were so big, they didn't do a lot with them, and they let natural breeding and things. I think they were called botchers or something. I forget what
they had
called
bicars?
Them. Maybe.
Or Bichardi.
Something. They have their young and then they protect them and stay with them.
Most cichlids are mouth brooders.
Yeah.
They keep them in their mouth and they spit them out and they guard. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
You were experiencing.
Yeah. Just like watching them, you know, them in the bottom, right? And this is like a 1,000-gallon tank, right? So they're hanging out, they're cruising the bottom, they're protecting their young, they're hiding the rocks, the young are learning how to feed. And then in the top, you got the mid-level swimmers that are kind of predatorial. And and that's one thing I find with breeding that we learn so much from. When we, only because in breeding, you have to get those natural responses and they have to feel right in order to trigger breeding. And like, that's when we really start to see them acting more natural. Funny story about that actually is I used to breed a lot of South American dwarf cichlids.
Okay.
And what was the one called? But anyway, basically with the male had to kind of show off and it had to feel a little bit of pressure in order to start spawning. So I took a mirror and I put it next to the tank and it started flashing and stuff. And all of a sudden babies are there. It was just like a really rewarding aquarium.
No, it is.
Story.
It's funny is, you know, I had friends that would call me that, you know, they weren't intending to breed, but they noticed breeding behavior in their tanks because they had a species only tank. And they're like, but the male and the female will not do anything. And I'm like, yeah, shoot me a picture of the tank. And it looks like New York City. There's just rocks everywhere. And I'm like, well, you do know that they need a little bit of flat space, you know, give them a flat rock. And I said, you know, clear out one side just a little bit, give them some room to come in there. They like hover and they bounce and let them do it. And I mean, it wasn't even a couple of days and the male was like, cleared it all out for him. The female comes in and he's like, what? I'm like, dude, I don't care if you kept him in an aquarium their whole life. They have natural tendencies. It's the same with any animal, whether they're in a zoo and you've taken them out to rehabilitate them from the wild, it doesn't go away. Even if they have young, we still have predatory instincts. We still have mating instincts. And we forget that because we're like, but it's just a sweet little fish in there. You know, it's, they're truly our natural creatures. We're just keeping them in glass boxes, which mm-hmm. when you say it like that, doesn't seem very cool.
I think that's the thing that becomes incumbent on the stores and more the more advanced hobbyists is we have to start getting people to think of their fish and their creatures as not just a commodity, but as your pet, just like you would as your dog, and understand it in the same way. We touched on this on one of our other podcasts because the Canadian government took away our access to a lot of our fish medications up here.
Sure did.
So that's an issue, but I think a lot of it could be combated if we fed them properly.
Yeah.
Rather than just throwing some pellets at them, giving them the varied diet, giving them the things that they need so that their immune system and their overall health was better so that they could fight that off. You wouldn't just, you know, chuck hot dogs at your dog every day, I assume. You would give them the proper food for a balanced diet, right?
No, it's, and I agree with you almost 100%. That fish has to be healthy when it gets there first.
True.
You know, the quarantine process that.
Yeah.
I believe based on what I know about nutrition from what I know, I'm not saying that this is it. You can provide a varied diet for a lot of fish through pelleted and flakes, but that's not for every fish. And you're absolutely right. And I think that's where we forget. Here's the problem with humans and loving their animals like they're beautiful pets is, oh, but he looks so hungry.
Yeah.
Does he, or are you hungry? Like there's, you know, there's the fish doesn't swim by and go, I'm hungry. It's conditioned now. It knows when you're coming up that you're probably going to feed. And I harped on this for the longest time. Like whatever you're feeding, feed half of that and feed it less often than what you're doing. Because the biggest myth is, well, I'm going to feed most fish. And I'm quoting, air quoting, because you can't see most fish three times a day for 2 minutes at a time so that they all eat it. And I'm going to do this every day. What? No, number one. And two, good luck cleaning that aquarium. And the big three, you're spending a lot on food that you don't have to. The fish are not going to, they have different digestive tracts, most fish than pretty much other animals that we are feeding. And so you got to fast them every once in a while, you know, a day they go by, like we just, three meals a day? Like, why did it have to be three meals a day? Why? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And then we're going to throw a snack? Well, I threw a zucchini in there as a snack. That's a freshwater thing. Right. What do you mean snack? Why didn't you just give it to them for food? They could have just had that for a couple of days. So you are right. I think when I knew Canada was getting ready to take away most of the, you know, the medicine for fish, for accessibility, that was a big thing. Like we just, you have to take better care of your fish. Like you really do. This can't be, oh, I'm going to use X, Y, Z because that's what I think it is. No, it wouldn't have been that problem if we would have quarantined and they had proper nutrition and a proper environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on that one talking about all that kind of stuff. And I mean, and again, it feels like we're going back to that other point of what is, you know, being able to get a lot of fish, and one thing I've gathered from saltwater, I think, is because it's so expensive to buy the fish, you really spend the time to do the research. Otherwise, you're just going to go broke. So, and, you know, for example, if we know that the fish are kind of grazing, they eat a lot of algae, they eat a lot of plant-based foods, or are they like a top predator that snap a fish once a week, you know?
Yep.
And then that digestive system is made to handle those types of, you know, fluctuations or non-fluctuations. Yeah. So it's like another thing, like, what do you have in your tank? Can you do some research on your own? And I remember when I first got into the aquarium hobby, which was like, I was pretty young and like, you couldn't find me to read a book, but you want me to read about fish? It's like,
Well, and a lot of those books are boring too.
Yeah.
You know, I was in a boat and saw this fish and like, oh, get to the point, guy. I need to know how big does it get?
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to ask you too about the YouTubing and how did you get into that? And it's been, seems like it's been years that you've been on there. What's your experience with that?
You seem to have a knack for that. Was that natural or did you coach to that?
No, it was actually natural. Because of my job in the military, I was always in front of folks that most people would be, I guess, more timid to talk around. And I wasn't really allowed to be. I had to communicate and it had to be communicated right then and there. And it's, you know, at that point, it was potentially life. Mm-hmm. I converted my mind to go, and this is a sad thing to say, but I'll step into a situation and I say, if I fail in this situation, is anybody going to die? The answer is no. So then we're good. If I mess up, it's okay. The YouTube started, it was accidental. When I started, the only person on YouTube was really Joey Mullins, the king of DIY. Mm-hmm. And he was doing the DIY stuff. And I would look for information on the internet about these fish. My doctor told me that I needed 100% to have a hobby. And so I had the cichlid tank, I set it up, and YouTube popped up. And there were three or four other folks that were messing around talking about African cichlids. I wasn't building anything, so I didn't pay that channel any attention. It was these three guys that I'm still friends with today. And I said, I need some help. And I would comment right on their video. And they're like, well, why don't you post your tank as a video so we can see it and we'll give you some help. And I was getting so tired of uploading videos so they can see it that I just started ultimately reading, even though I didn't want to, and educating myself and using common practices of where these fish are coming from. And then I just jumped into what I was doing on camera. Mm-hmm. And at first you can, if you ever go back to the first video I've ever made on YouTube, I apologize. I was going through some stuff when I got out and that was the start. You can hear my voice. It's not me. And then I just progressed and then I matured over the years. YouTube's not my favorite. It helps me connect. It helped me get to where I'm at today, but there's so much now. And you have to do so many different things to be what viewed. That's good. So I can play with it, have fun with it and enjoy it. But at the same time, for me, it's an outlet. I do my live videos every Wednesday night and I have a nice adult beverage. We chat, I have a topic. And then at the end of most of my videos, I have a little bit of reality motivation. And it's my release. It's my fun. And you can see it in comments. People will say if they don't like it and I tell them that's okay. Goodbye. Like you don't have to do any of this with me. Mm-hmm. So it ultimately was my platform to get me where I'm at today. I educated myself because I don't want to be in front of anybody. And if I'm talking about something and I don't know, and I pretend that I know, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't do that in life. Mm-hmm. And so I had to educate myself. But for me, when I started, you can see a lot of giveaways I did. That was when you can contact a company, write them a very nice email, explain what you're trying to do. And I did everything from raising money to homeless shelters to, you know, children's homes to providing money for other hobbyists that were going through some tough times. That's really what I've been using YouTube for up until this point. And now it's just really for me to document and hopefully my son can look back and be like, wow, my dad was weird. He liked fish. And that's really it. But it's provided me where I'm at right now to talk to you guys. I mean, if I didn't have a YouTube channel to start, I wouldn't be sitting here. I know it. I would be doing, you know, I was working at AT&T when I first started YouTube. So
yeah, that's it. That's pretty awesome. I really like to hear about, you know, when, cause we find Ian talk about this a lot too, about, you know, people don't
influencing social media and all that.
No, it's a little more. What I was getting at was actually like, people don't get why we spend so much time on this topic. And it's usually because the aquariums it's like they're offering us more than just something pretty to look at. And it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's camaraderie. It's an interest. It's something, like you said, to keep your mind occupied. I can relate on some levels to why you have probably delved into this. I've had PTSD of my own through my own career. Yep. It absolutely does help. It gives you something else to do with your mind. It's an outlet. It's a place to go that's calming and something you can share with other people. And, you know, yep. I get it. There's more to it than just fish.
Mm-hmm. It, and I think, so that's the tough part, right? Like the social media, when somebody goes, oh, there's a YouTuber, or there's an Instagram influencer or whatever. The first part, even sometimes myself, I'm like, oh man, like, golly, that, what are they doing? But at the same time, they didn't just start aquariums to make money, because if that's what you thought,
it's
the wrong place to be. Unless you're honestly, if you're inventing something or you're manufacturing something that, you know, takes off, it's different. And stores, you know, can be very lucrative, but you know, I love seeing folks that just get in and they're like, well, I buy all my fish from here because my local fish store charges $5 extra. And man, forget that. They're rich. They can deal with the lost business. And it's like, what? Do you have any idea what you are saying?
Yeah.
No, number one. So it's there's a lot of parts to the aquarium hobby mm-hmm. and industry. And there's one thing that needs to be done on these reality shows. Forget the housewives and stuff. How about like fish keepers of Las Vegas or fish, you know, like to see this in real life, people would be mind blown at what people go as far to do for aquariums and where their career goes.
Not on the level of the show that's not around anymore, but like actually do.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like actual, like store owners. I think it would be amazing to follow real store owners on a show for, you know, maybe run 4 or 5 stores and you're running them for 6 months as you're building content with them. Like you get to see everything. Like I want a
24-hour day job.
Yeah. I mean, I finished work today. It's always funny because I'll get folks, and I'm sure Ian, you get this all the time. It's like, man, it must be nice to own a fish store. And it's like, there are days when it is absolutely amazing. I know that.
Yep.
But it is not rainbow unicorn farts all day long.
I think
it's not.
No, I often think that. And it's totally an innocent thought on most people's behalf. But I think that they think that a lot of time we're sitting around enjoying the fish, staring at the coral. That is very rarely what I have time to do. I am certainly not sitting there waiting for someone to come talk to me all day.
Correct. And then it's, but the crazy part to me is it's almost like expected. If I message you at 9 o'clock at night and you don't answer, no business from me. I'm like, did you message Walmart at 9 o'clock at night?
It's because it's a hobby based business, I found.
Correct.
And people becomes, you know, the line between customer and friend gets blurred. I found that I had to sort of not take a hard line with anybody, but take a hard line with myself because I was making myself too accessible at the expense of my family. So I try not to answer business emails or texts or something for, you know, when I get home to when my kids go to bed as much as possible, unless it's, you know, time sensitive or whatever, but
absolutely
you have to draw that line or you would start to not enjoy the hobby because it would take you over and you'd resent it.
Yep. When I did Northfin USA, a quick note, the one thing I said, somebody called me at like 10 o'clock at night. I answered the phone and they said, the post office lost my package. What are you going to do? And I said, I can call the post office in the morning. It's 10 o'clock at night. He's like, well, I need an answer. And I said, hey, quick question. And this is exactly how I said it. Hey, quick question. What do you do for a living? And the person was in car sales. And I said, do you answer customer calls at 10 o'clock at night because their oil needs to be changed? And he's like, no, I wouldn't answer it if they left a voicemail and I would try to do it in the morning when I got into work. I was like, oh, I'll call the post office in the morning. And the guy emailed me and said he didn't understand the question at first and it hit him later on that evening. And he wrote me this long story of how he apologized. And it was like my win because we don't realize it. I do it too. I emailed a builder, not expecting anything, email right back. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And then my immediate thing is, oh, let me just fire off another one and another one. And it's, that's the line. And I don't think it's just friendships. I just think it's that service that we want.
Yeah, we've all become trained that way with this digital age. And, you know, we're all, yeah. The person that's answering is just as guilty as the person answering or asking the question. Yeah. Right? And that's what I was finding. Like, I am not obligated to answer this. This is, I'm at home and family time, but I'm doing it anyways. It's just as much my issue as anybody else's.
Yeah. So it's crazy. I actually got questions for you guys. I mean, I'm dead center of the United States, but are the stores open? Or what are you guys allowed to do right now?
No, it's really strange here.
I know that.
It's not clear. We're in a lockdown situation. So there's a stay at home order for a few more days anyway. So as much as possible, we're supposed to stay home and not go out unless it's for food or things or like that. Now, gotcha. That being said, me myself as a store, I'm allowed to be open and offer curbside service. So no one's allowed to come in the store. So it makes it challenging that way. It kind of goes in the face of a stay-at-home order. So the whole thing kind of confused me a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's
very unique.
It's a unique situation. I guess they're just trying to do their best and roll with it like anybody else.
Well, nobody knows what we're doing right now. Nobody knows, right? Nobody. Yeah. So everybody's just trying something out. I get it.
I don't know.
Well, is the store okay though? That's the big question.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it could be better. I mean, it's harder for people. I think some people are trying to observe the stay-at-home order as much as possible. So we instituted a delivery service that we're trying to ramp up now. But there's a lot of online stuff and things are going that way. But I definitely see certain things trending downwards, like fish, for example. Mm-hmm. Inverts cleanup crew that sells coral, no problem. They can see that online, but a lot of people want to see the fish. And I get that. They want to come in and look at it. So I'm finding that the stuff that where they would need to come in and feel better and look at it, that stuff has trended downwards in my area. That may not be everywhere, but.
Well, fish is trending. If you get it, you get it here. That's just how hard it is to get most stuff. But what if you WYSIWYG'd? You guys use the word WYSIWYG up there, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, the first time I heard that, I had no idea. I thought it was a noodle. I'm like, WYSIWYG? This is a game?
Wait, I don't know what WYSIWYG is. So I need
what you see is what you get.
Okay.
So I didn't know, man. Somebody was like, so you want to check out the WYSIWYG? I'm like, wait, first off, I don't know you. So I don't know what WYSIWYG is. But ultimately, why don't you WYSIWYG the fish?
Oh, yeah. Trying to do as much of that. I have the website set up for it. It comes down to, for me again, the time thing.
There's enough hours
in the day.
Yeah.
And I have my staff that helps me, but he's got his responsibilities too. And it's just, sometimes it's difficult.
No, I agree 100%.
We had the kids at home for homeschooling. And it's been a challenge. Like, I would love to do all those things, but COVID has made it. I thought when we locked down and stuff, I would have more time. And what I found out is I have less because you had to have responsibilities with the kids at home. But in the store, because nobody can come in, I'm balancing two phones all the time because someone's going to call to check on their order. Then they're going to call when they get there. And then they're going to call. And so I've actually lost time to do some of that stuff because I have to spend so much more time finding other ways for people to be able to communicate. And it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meanwhile, restaurants are like, yeah, we've been doing delivery and taking calls and all this for our whole life.
Yeah. And, we just weren't prepared for that kind of thing, right? It's not our model. So we're sort of morphing with the times and I'm learning a lot from it for sure.
I dig it. Good. But well, I like that you're learning and morphing.
Yeah. You have to. If you don't morph with this, because I don't think that we're going to come out of this and, you know, I think there's a, might not be a popular theory. I think there's an unrealistic theory that we're going to come out of this one day and everything's just going to go back to the way it was. I don't know that will ever be exactly the way things were. I think there will be things that come out of this that change. I don't know what those things will be. So if we don't learn from this now, we're going to get left behind.
I agree. I just think we should be normal, healthy human beings where you shouldn't be all up on me in normal life. And blow your nose.
Yeah.
And don't shake my hand. Like, let's go back to politeness.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. When are you, so your store is good to go. and you're moving during all this, guy. Don't think you could just sit there and not answer. Like, has that just kind of, because for us it's different here. It's way different, especially in where I'm at. It's more rural. It's country. You know, we don't get a ton of visitors. It's not jam packed, so it is very different. Mm-hmm. But moving, has a lot of stuff changed for that, or is it similar?
Well, for me, so I was living where Ian lives, and I'm moving about 2 hours closer to family and for a new job. So I'm working the new job and all that stuff. And actually, I'm really fortunate that I haven't slowed down work wise. And building, you know, I'm doing a lot of renovations right now. So with it's kind of nice because I can't go anywhere anyway. So I'll just work in the house all day. I will say, as a, you know, with running For the Reef, you know, for example, this is a passion project. It's a social enterprise, and it's something that, you know, whether people think it or not, it's tight all the time. And when the shutdown first happened and we lost the ability to go and sell at shows, now all of a sudden we have this inventory that needs to be gone. So you flush out the inventory, and now manufacturers of, you know, I make things in Canada, trying to do that right now is really, really difficult, taking on that risk, not knowing where to sell it. So it really hits everybody everywhere, but it's just something like, you know, I guess we all just have to figure out ways to get through this, and hopefully it's over sooner than later.
I'm treating it like a pinball game, and you just smash the buttons on the side.
Yeah.
And I'm just bam, bam, I'm just playing the game.
Yeah.
But no, it's I mean, we've got some shows that are happening here. They're, you know, reduced capacity, stuff like that. You have to have the mask. Stores are pretty much open. There's capacity in certain states. So it's just like anywhere, right? Instead of provinces, we've got the states. So each state has their own slight take on the rule. I went to go visit my sister, and she's in Connecticut, and I flew into New Jersey like a knucklehead. And there was like armed National Guardsmen off the plane. And I'm like, hey guy, just going to visit family. Mm-hmm. It's very unique, but I'm glad to know that you guys are still rocking, and I'm glad to know that everything else is jamming. So
sweet. So it looks like Ian had to drop off here. I think it has something to do with his connection, but we're getting closer to the end.
Do your thing, man.
I really appreciate it, man. And you know, we've met in person. I'm really glad that we did this, and hope to do it again. Hope to see you soon. You know, whether it be at the Coral Show or something like that. Really, really appreciate it, brother. So thanks a lot for coming on and chatting with us.
No, I mean, this is what I like doing, right? I like to have fun doing this, and to see you guys when I can't see you in person, man, I'll take what I can get right now. So keep grinding, have fun, stay positive.
Right on, man.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the For the Reef podcast. As always, you can reach us at ForTheReefPodcast@gmail.com or via our websites, ForTheReef.com or SustainableMarineCanada.ca. If you would like to get involved and help the reef restoration efforts, check out our friends at CaymanEcoDivers.com. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please hit subscribe and join us for the next episode coming soon.